Welcome back to the Educated Patient Podcast. I'm your host, Mike DeMarco, and today we are joined by Dr. P from Baptist Health Urgent Care. Dr. P, thank you for joining us. Our conversation will center around spring break and travel overall. So really excited for this. I know a lot of people are either in the midst of planning their vacations or they're going on spring break. So Dr. P, can you just kick us off by giving some context to listeners on what you do for practice, how long you've been practicing, and anything else that would help the listeners understand who you are?
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Mike, for having me here. It really is a pleasure to be here with you. I will tell you that I am Dr. P, Dr. Pormasia, and I am the medical director of the Baptist Health Urgent Cares in Broward County. And I've been doing this since, I would say, about 2012, 2013. And I do have the honor of working as the medical director in our Coral Springs site. And I also have the luxury of being able to see the patients myself. So I'm very involved in their patient care. And so it truly is a good combination. And I've been doing this for quite some time. So it's fun to do, especially during these times.
Love that. Today's convo is around travel and spring break. So I'd love to just kick us off and get going with starting at the high level. What are some of the most common kind of bullet points or things that you see people running into as issues when they're traveling?
So I will tell you that the things that we usually see in our urgent cares, spring break is a fun time, right? But the thing is that we see a lot of people that are coming from traveling, they're coming from tourism, there's a lot of outdoor activities, and you just have like this complete disruption of your normal routines. And so that leads to a lot of issues with patients that end up having viral infections, they end up having some foodborne illnesses, sun-related issues, musculoskeletal issues. And so those are the complications that we typically see with people that are traveling.
Because you're in Florida, I imagine you'll get a lot of people coming down towards you, right, to vacation and travel. And I didn't even remember this coming into the podcast, but you just reminded me, we took a trip to Disney when I was a kid. And I was the one that got the fever, that got stuck in the hotel room for 48 hours. And my mom probably went to an urgent care or something at that time to get some medicine for me. So I have firsthand experience, totally understand that. What are some of the things that you, like, if I'm coming to you, right, I'm traveling to Florida, I pop with a fever and it's too late. Like I've already been through the disruption, right? What are some things that I could have been considering prior to coming down to Florida for spring break or for travel that may have put me in a better position to not necessarily contract some of these issues?
So I think that immune system is key, right? So, prior to travel, it's always very good to keep that immune system bumped up as much as possible. So good sleep, good hydration, being able to eat the proper foods, being able to kind of, boost up on our vitamins and so forth is a great thing to do prior to travel. But you were talking about the urgent care and your mom having to go there. And one of the things I always recommend to people prior to traveling is knowing where you're going. We know we want to travel, we want to see new places, but you got to be familiar with the area that you're going. And with that being said, I always recommend people to know what facilities are around there. With the fever that you mentioned, to know what urgent cares are available, what hospitals are available in that area, so that you know, even pharmacies, so that you know where you can get what you need at appropriate times.
And obviously, coming down to Florida, for many people coming from the Midwest or the Northeast, we're coming off of many months of being in the cold. It isn't necessarily front of mind for people to realize that that's a big shift for them internally with regards to being proactive with hydration and being considerate of dehydration. Even though it's not the dead heat, like the peak heat of Florida, it's still something that they need to be mindful of. So I would love to just dive into some of the hydration kind of conversation or dehydration considerations.
Absolutely. So again, I think one of the things that's most underestimated when people come to this sunny Florida is the fact that it's hot. And even if it doesn't feel that hot, and even if we have clouds up there, there's a lot of UV exposure, and people will get dehydrated very quickly. And so hydration is key. And we get it. It's spring break most of the time. People are coming from colder places. They want to be out in the sun. They want to do outdoor stuff. But it is a toll on the body. And one of the biggest mistakes I think people do when they come down here is they think that hydrating with alcohol is the same as hydrating with water. And it's a completely different spiel. And so we always recommend to be very wary of the sun in South Florida, making sure that you're wearing your sunscreen, making sure that sometimes you can even have protective clothing, making sure to hydrate yourself as much as possible and not using alcohol as a alternative for water.
Is there a difference like drinking in the sun versus not in the sun?
Absolutely. So alcohol on its own has a couple of, I would say, properties that we are not very in favor of. And without going into a lot of detail behind the science of it, alcohol does a couple things. It's a diuretic effect, which means that it basically causes you to excrete more urine than the fluid intake that we have. And so, with that being said, especially when you're out in the sun, you're more prone to being dehydrated, especially if you're drinking. So, that's why we always recommend to people if you're gonna drink, you know you're gonna be outside, try to hydrate with water during the day out in the sun. And if you want to drink, try to keep it during the colder nights.
Is does it change with different types of alcohol? For example, like is it better for me to drink clear in the sun versus beer or vice versa? Or does it not necessarily matter?
To be quite honest, I think that it's very vague. It really depends on people's bodies, their alcohol tolerance. But what we do say is that the combination of alcohol and the sun are just not a good combination. And it does deal with dehydration. It does deal with even a progression for heat stroke and also vasodilation as well. What happens is that you end up vasodilating, or your blood vessels in your skin end up widening. And that actually causes for the blood to be pulled from your inner core away, and it pulls it away so that your body's not able to basically regulate your body temperature. So the combination of alcohol and the sun is no good, I will tell you that. And in addition, alcohol actually causes photosensitivity that's even worsened. So drinking in the sun can actually cause you to get worsening of sunburns.
I've experienced that in my lifetime.
Yes.
And you don't feel it. Even like on an overcast day, you're like,
Correct.
nah, I'm good. I'm okay. And then you wake up the next, I at least I do, wake up lobstered the next day.
And that's the thing, it's an overcast day. People think that they're okay, but the reality of it is that those UV rays are there, and that's why we're very specific about the sunblocks, making sure that you're using the adequate amount of sunblock, making sure you're using at least SPF 50, where we know that there's 98% coverage for the UVA and UVB, broad spectrum sunblocks. And we always say to reapply it every 2 hours. People put it on, they're really excited to spend the day out. They put a little bit on right before they go out, and they're like, okay, I put on my sunblock. But no, we actually would advise at minimum to put it on every 2 hours. And if you're going to be in the hot sun and you know that you're sweating and you know that you're going to be out in the water, we actually recommend to put it on even more than that.
What about salt supplementation or Pedialytes and things of that nature, or liquid IVs, right? Like this whole category of things that I can supplement for hydration. Those are just coming to mind while you're talking about hydration and dehydration, specifically, going on that bachelor party and everyone wakes up and everyone has a liquid IV or something like that. Are those things helpful to consider in these scenarios, or not
I
necessarily?
would go with, we like to keep things simple. So oral rehydration is best. Obviously, we love water, but water is not going to replace all those electrolytes that we may lose. You were talking about a bachelor party, lots of drinking, and with drinking comes vomiting. And so what happens is that you lose a lot of electrolytes. And so you want to replenish those electrolytes. And that is where the Gatorades and those electrolyte drinks come handy, the Pedialytes, the Gatorades, the G2 Gatorades. And that's basically to replenish those electrolytes. But hydration is key. But when oral hydration just doesn't do the job. And when somebody has the inability to keep down fluids, or there's persistent vomiting, or when there's severe abdominal pain due to dehydration, those are the cases where we recommend that patients are seen in urgent cares or in ERs so that they can be given IV fluids and help that situation faster before it leads to more compromise.
We talked about hydration and water. I want to shift to food because I think food is also something to be considered. What are some safety tips for somebody that's traveling to think ahead of their travel so that they can potentially make better choices or help themselves avoid the risk of having food poisoning or something that doesn't necessarily agree with their regular diet they're accustomed to at home?
Absolutely. So everybody wants a little bit of freedom, I would say, when they're traveling, because you want to try new places, you want to try new foods, and that's great. But again, we'll talk about Florida, for example, because this is a warmer climate area. And so a lot of people coming from the north, we've got a lot of our snowbirds, are used to eating their food and it kind of sitting out for a while and it's still being okay. In these warmer climates, food is not okay when it's just sitting out. As a matter of fact, the warmer climates cause for multiplication of bacteria in those foods. And the reality of it is that food should be served either hot or cold, not at room temperature. So things that you're kind of looking for is to make sure that food hasn't been sitting out for long periods of time. Sometimes people love to go to the buffets here, making sure that the food is not left uncovered, making sure that the restaurants that you're picking has good ratings, is not really unsanitary. Also, coming on vacation and places, you like to go to places that are crowded, like the beach, and sometimes there's food that's laid out there. Well, problem with that is that when everybody starts kind of touching the same food areas, now we're at increased risk of contamination and people touching things. So that increases your risk of not only viral infections, but also having foodborne illnesses. And obviously, I would say one of the red flags, or one of the things I would watch out for immediately, is if there's a strong odor, specifically with seafood.
So let's imagine I come down to Florida. Family and I are vacationing. We're 24 hours into the trip, and I start to experience some symptoms. I know for myself, my first thought is, I'm going to wait this out. We've been waiting 11 months to come on this vacation. I'm not going to panic and run to the urgent care. I'll wait it out. What advice would you have for somebody like myself who's going to try and wait it out with regards to knowing when it's the right time to seek medical attention and or like in the situation of food poisoning, like how can I wait it out effectively until it's the right time to go seek medical help?
So, the body has this enormous capacity to heal itself for the most part, but there is a certain wall that the body hits. And when it hits that wall, you really need to seek medical care. And I would say that the clues for somebody that may have had some type of food poisoning or some type of GI upset would be the inability to keep food down or to keep fluids down, persistent vomiting, severe abdominal pain, blood in their stool, high fevers. Those are all things that when they start to spike, it's very rare that it starts to just kind of dissipate on its own. And so even if it's just a watching and waiting in an urgent care setting or an ER setting, or just getting a liter of fluids, for example, it's a lot safer than to decompensate at home.
And if I am waiting it out, right, what do you think is the next best step for me? Should I go right to the ER? Is it an urgent care? Should I call my doc at home first to see what their opinion is? Or is it some combination of those?
So I think that, it really depends on the specific situation. If it is a severe case where you are with a high fever, the abdominal pain is so immense, I would say in those cases, for the most part, to go to the ER because there's a lot of imaging that can be done in those places to rule out specific disorders and infections. If it's something that's a little bit more mild, where there's a little bit of abdominal bloating, cramping, maybe a low-grade fever, maybe a little bit of inability to keep down foods, but you're still able to drink, and maybe you just need some anti-nausea medicine. In those cases, I would say go to an urgent care, have them evaluate you, check your vitals, and make sure that you're stable. The calling the doctor at home is great. The problem with that is that it's kind of hard to reach them when you're on vacation, and then to be able to get the proper physical examination assessment that you need over the phone. So I would say know the area that you're at, know your surroundings, know what medical facilities are around you, and make sure that they're within a good, a good amount of distance from where you're at so that you could get to them quickly when you're on vacation.
I want to pivot here and jump back to the skin conversation. We were starting to touch it a little bit a few minutes ago, but I really want to unpack that conversation because you did mention SPF 50, right? Because it's proven to be what we need. How if I'm somebody that is coming from the North or from the Midwest, right? And I've been essentially hibernating from the sun for the past 6 months. Do I need more than SPF 50, right? Do I need to start looking higher than that into the 70s, or is 50 still enough for me?
So, I mean, listen, the more the merrier, right? There's nothing wrong with putting more, especially if you've been out of the sun for quite some time. But we're at a 98% level, with the SPF 50. And for the most part, the majority of people do well with that. Now, again, the Florida sun is a beast on its own. And coming to Florida doesn't mean that you have to spend every waking moment in the sun. And so there's other recommendations that we have, aside from increasing that SPF level. And that's if you're going to do outdoor activities, it's fine, but try to find some shade when you can, especially if you know you're going to be outdoors, whether it's sitting under a tree, whether it's going under a tent for some time. If you know you're going to be doing a lot of outdoor activities, sometimes it might be best to wear some light colored clothing that might also be very light in its texture and maybe long sleeve. And also in Florida, and in most places, we know that those UV exposures are worst anywhere from 10 in the morning to 4 in the afternoon, with the peak being around 12 to 2. So, you have a wide array of time to be out in the Florida sun. So maybe avoiding those peak hours if you know that your skin is sensitive or that you're not used to this blazing hot sun in Florida.
I was actually thinking about that when you were going through that list right there was if you have intentions of hiking or walking on the beach or whatever it might be, get it in before 10 or get it in after 5, kind of on the opposite ends of that bell curve.
Absolutely.
Are there any other things that you think are helpful to can be considering with regards to just making sure you're doing everything in your power to maintain good skin health?
Well, we talk about sunblock as it is while you're on vacation, but honestly, when it comes to skin health, I mean, you want to be using sunblock no matter where you are. It protects the skin, it helps with aging. So there's a lot of things that I would recommend with that. But with skin health also comes hydration. So it's, avoiding as much sun exposure as possible, but also making sure that you're hydrating your skin, as much as possible in that process.
Interesting. So both of these big topics we've covered so far, dehydration, and skin come together here. And what you're saying is that like if I'm dehydrated most of the time, I'm also kind of drying out my own skin before the sun even gets to it.
Absolutely. And it's a funny thing with dehydration, because people always wonder, how does dehydration take place? And you'd be surprised. When we wake up in the morning, we're already slightly dehydrated in our baseline. And the reason for that is because, we've been sleeping for about 8 hours or so. So you're not drinking while you're sleeping. If you're on vacation, let's say, if you're, on spring break somewhere, you had a long night the night before, maybe you were drinking some alcohol. Alcohol's already caused you to be a little bit more dehydrated. And then you wake up, and most people don't go grab the biggest cup of water and ice that they can drink. They wake up and they're like, let me have some coffee, which is also not the best thing to hydrate yourself with. And so you already start off the day with a tad bit of dehydration, and as you go out in the sun, as you're not drinking, as you're replacing your water with alcohol, that can actually further lead to dehydration. And that's where we start to see people getting those minor, symptoms of dehydration. And that's again, like I said, we're sweating, we're out in the sun, so we're having a lot more fluid loss than intake, and that's when it can get dangerous, and people end up in our urgent cares.
Our whole conversation has been when we arrive, a little bit of like before you arrive at your destination for spring break or vacation. But you just dropped the thought in my head around the flight or the travel, right? And how much impact does altitude and flying and traveling have on hydration and dehydration?
So I would say that I wouldn't be as concerned with hydration and dehydration when it comes to flying. What I would be concerned about is viral infections and different types of bacterial infections, to be quite honest. When you think about traveling, we have a bunch of healthy people that have kind of had their life that's been very calm, sedentary, sitting in front of a computer, being in school, and all of a sudden now you're traveling and you're getting on an airplane, you're getting on buses, you're getting in crowded places like hotel rooms. And in those places, the hydration would not be my concern. It would be that there's a massive amount of people in one small place. And when you think about that, now you're increasing the risk of viral infections. And that's what usually happens is we have these very healthy people that prior to traveling were feeling completely fine. And then all of a sudden on day two of travel, they've come down with a cold. So that is my concern when it comes to flying and being in busy airports is the fact that there's so much exposure to viruses and foodborne illnesses that that's what can actually affect people while traveling.
What is the sunblock equivalent on the virus side or the bacteria side that people can be mindful of using so that they're at least mitigating some of the risk of the contamination?
I think we kind of talked about the immune system being our best defense. This is prior to travel, but I will tell you that during travel, again, hydration is key. You want to keep your immune system up, you want to keep your body full of energy. Hand sanitizer is key, and making sure that you're, keeping your hands clean, making sure that the surfaces around you are clean. Some people might take it overboard and have their, Clorox wipes with them to be able to wipe surfaces that have been touched by multiple people. So those are all definitely recommendations. And I would say, if I had to think about the sunblock version, I would say definitely getting your vaccines. And I would go into that route and making sure that not only are you keeping your body safe, but you've also have those vaccines that are available for us to not to necessarily prevent us from getting any illness, but at least to make sure that if and when that illness happens, that it's a little bit more of a stable case and not a complicated case.
Are there any, in addition to vaccines and the immune system and water, are there any like foods or supplements to prioritize or dial up a little
Absolutely.
bit?
Your vitamin C is essential, the zinc, making sure that you're having a lot of fruit intake, vegetable intake, trying not to overload yourself with those high processed foods, making sure that it's not so much of a carb diet, more of like a healthy protein diet, all those things that'll get your body functioning and keep it as healthy as possible.
I'm gonna pivot again and start to ask some questions. Maybe they're random, maybe they're not, but
Go for it.
from the lens of urgent care, right? I'm sure you see a wide array of things that come in the front door. I want to speak for a moment specifically to musculoskeletal considerations. What are some of the most common things that people are walking in with while they're on vacation that are injuries that are happening with their bodies?
Got you. Okay. So, in an everyday given urgent care day, I would tell you, we see everything from fractures to sprains and so forth. But I just want to kind of emphasize spring break. And the reason why is because our injuries start to change just a tad bit. And again, it has to do with the fact that there is a higher amount of alcohol consumption. And when that ends up happening, there's a little bit more of disorientation. There's a little bit of a change in coordination and in judgment. And so, The everyday falls and so forth is definitely something that we see, but now we're looking at incidences that can be secondary to motor vehicle accidents or bike and scooter injuries or boat and driving injuries. And those tend to be a little bit more significant and acute. And so with those, again, we do see maybe deeper lacerations. We can see some head concussions. We can see some fractures. We can see some sprains that occur. And again, they become a little bit more intense because of the injury that's involved.
If I was leaving this podcast and going home, and I was like in the last 5 minutes before I had to put my suitcase in the Uber to go to the airport, what are some last minute things that I could grab real quick or maybe put in my Amazon cart to meet me at my hotel when I arrive at my destination?
Okay, so the last 5 minutes, they're tough. You pretty much forget everything, including your keys, probably. But I think that the important things to remember in the last 5 minutes is if you have any medication that you take daily, make sure that's packed because that's going to be a hard one to replace. It's not like a pair of shoes, it's not like a t-shirt. These are medications that you're going to need and they don't come by easily. So I would definitely say within those last 5 minutes, make sure that you have your medications packed. And even if you don't take that medication every day, but it's your rescue inhaler, for example, or if you have allergies, and you need that EpiPen, make sure that you have that available because, like I said, in cases of emergencies that are, life-threatening, those are the things that are going to save you. I mean, obviously, I would say within those last 5 minutes, make sure that you have your ID with you, make sure that you have your cell phones with you. People love to carry their cell phones everywhere, but guess what? That cell phone needs to be charged. And most of the time, people forget their charger. And, living in the world that we live in right now, a cell phone is a lifeline, not only because we use it for social matters, but because we look at, we use it to look up locations, to look up information. And so making sure that you have that. The other thing I would say, and again, on a medical standpoint, is to make sure that you have maybe a first aid kit packed in there somewhere. You can always go to an urgent care. You can always, call an ambulance. But being able to do those basic first things when an injury takes place is key. So I would definitely say to keep those in mind before the bathing suit, before the nice shoes, before the hot purse. Make sure you got that in your bag.
What about this just came to me in the moment, and maybe it's a silly question, but what about some considerations for individuals that are currently living with specific chronic conditions or they're taking medication for blood pressure or something like that? Are there additional considerations for these individuals to make sure that they're safeguarding themselves for an event that might occur when they're on vacation, such as informing somebody at home, this is where I'm going to be if this X, Y, and Z happens, or traveling with a specific type of documentation so that if an event happens, it helps you help them more effectively?
Absolutely. So just to kind of piggyback off of what you're saying with blood pressure. So somebody that has high blood pressure, one of the things they also forget is to bring their blood pressure cuff so that they can check their blood pressure. And so, even if they're taking their medications because there might be a change in their diet or they're eating more at restaurants and eating more outside, that sodium intake changes and that can increase their blood pressure. So making sure they're monitoring that blood pressure is key and kind of adhering to that DASH diet. The other thing that I would say is when you do have chronic conditions or not even have a chronic condition because there can be an accident, there could be an event that happens to anybody, whether you have a chronic condition or not, is definitely letting your relatives know where you are, where you're going to be staying, and having them have access to you. But for us, for example, in Florida, where we see multiple snowbirds and we see multiple people that walk through our doors, whether it's in the urgent care, whether it's in the ERs, sometimes those people aren't able to talk to us. Unfortunately, if it's a motor vehicle accident, for example, and somebody's unconscious, it's very hard to get that information from them. So I always recommend for people to not only have their IDs with them, but to have a piece of paper or some type of documentation, prior to traveling that says your name, your age, maybe your past medical history, your history of allergies, the chronic conditions that you might have, even maybe your insurance information. So all that information is already there, a point of contact for us. So that information is there for us to not only utilize to be efficient, but to be able to effectively take care of you.
Slightly different kind of angle here, but from your perspective, I'm going on this vacation I do once a year, and I'm going on spring break, or I'm going on the bachelor trip, or I'm going on this thing, and I'm making an assumption based upon how I've operated within my head on some of these trips. It's a release, right? It's an escape. It's a release. I'm escaping the reality of my day-to-day life. How can you help me kind of like reel that in so I'm not substantially increasing my risk for all of the things that we've discussed so far?
Okay. So, I think everything in moderation, right? The way that I see it is kind of like going on a vacation. You want your freedom. I mean, you've been working hard to get to this vacation, right? But at the same time, you still want a little bit of structure. Even if you want to party all day, just know that at nighttime, like it's going to be a time where that party has to end and you need to sleep so that you could continue to have the energy for the following day. And I think that that's kind of a key thing. Indulgence, I think that's great. During vacation, you want to indulge in cultures, you want to indulge in different types of foods, but also just making sure that you're kind of having a few grounding habits of what are, things that your body can tolerate or hasn't been able to tolerate in the past, or making sure that you've done your research as to where it is that you're going to go and eat the food to make sure that your body is safe when you're indulging in these different things. And then I would also say disconnection, right? We spend hours and hours and hours at work or at school, and we just want to let go and we want to be free of responsibility. Responsibility and fun. And that's great during vacations. But we want to make sure that we don't disconnect to the point where we lose track of time, where we're wasting our vacation time, and at least being a little bit mindful and aware of real life that's happening around us.
Love that. Last question. For me, just going through this conversation with you, and somebody's listening to this, and we just worked through a bulleted list of topics and recommendations and all of these things to consider, and it feels like a lot. And I'm not trying to feel like a lot when I go on vacation. I'm trying to feel like exactly like you just described. I want freedom within control. I still want to have agency over my experience, but I do still want to have the freedom. How can I be mindful of all of the things that we just discussed without overthinking it, overcomplicating it, and kind of feeling the burden of trying to check the box on everything we talked about?
Got you. So, to me, you should never try to manage your vacation. You just need some anchoring points during your vacation. And so for me, it's kind of like three non-negotiables. And that's making sure, like I said, to make sure that you are staying hydrated, make sure that you're sleeping, maybe not missing meals. And the rest of it is all fun. You need to know who you are, what expectations that you have for yourself, and then making sure that you realize that your vacation, or what we want to call our trip, is really just a change in location. And it's not a break from, taking care of yourself or those healthy habits that you are routinely used to.
I don't have anything else. That was like the best answer. I love that.
Thank
Because
you. I appreciate it.
it's so simple, right? It's within the framework that you just gave. It allows for anybody to plug in what fits best for them down to the individual level, right? For some.
Absolutely. And the whole point of going on vacation is to have fun. But I think with everything in life, moderation is key. And if people are, hydrating themselves, if they're, taking care of their skin, making sure that they're using sunblock, making sure that they're sleeping well, and doing things in moderation, you probably will not end up in the urgent cares or needing to seek any type of medical care. We hope.
Dr. P, any final thoughts?
No, I just, I urge everybody to stay safe. I urge everybody to, not only care for themselves, but to be cognizant of what's going on around them. In Florida, there's a lot of water activities. So just be cognizant of the children that are swimming around you, adults that might be drinking and maybe having a little bit less of, a slower reaction time, to just kind of watch everybody so that this could be a safe and fun, break for everybody.
Great. Dr. P, thank you for joining us today. Thank you to those of you listening to the Educated Patient Podcast. If you're interested in going deeper on some of the things we discussed today, please visit theeducatedpatient.com and stay tuned for many more episodes rolling out in 2026. Have a great day, everyone.
Thank you for having me.